There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Hey, welcome to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5, FMTalk106.5.com. Filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan today, you have Jeff Poore. That's me. Breitbart News, Lion Yap, Yellowhammer News. I'm here giving Sean a couple hours off here. Very busy, busy guy. Coming up on the program today, we're going to hear from State Senator Greg Allbritton. Asked him to come on. Still some talk about what's going on with the state budget, going into the economy and the downturn with the pandemic. And Del Marsh, the pro tem, is talking about having some budget hearings coming out of it could go into next month. There's some priorities there. What are those priorities? What is the legislature looking to accomplish here? And is there any reason to be optimistic? Governor Ivey would call a special session to deal with any all of this. We're going to talk to him there at the bottom of the hour. Also, in the next hour, you'll want to stay tuned. Congressman Mo Brooks will be with us. So a big debate on the House floor today about giving the District of Columbia statehood. As you know, the District of Columbia, not really a state, has representation in Congress, has a non-voting delegate who gets committee assignments, Eleanor Holmes Norton, but they don't have a vote in the Senate or in the House. A lot of people see this as Democrats making a play for two more Senate seats. So Congressman Brooks goes to the floor today, just rails against it, talks about what a crazy idea, and it's also unconstitutional. As you know, our Constitution did not want government representing government into Congress, and how incestuous that would be. So that's why the District of Columbia was created. Could they do something additionally to give the residents of D.C. more of a voice? They could give parts of the district perhaps back to Maryland, but that, you know, then you're just giving more of a burden to Maryland's two existing senators. Maybe pick up a congressman in the fold there, but we're gonna talk to Congressman Brooks about that. Looking forward to that. Let's get into some politics, into the news. You might be seeing a lot of polling right now about the presidential race, particularly now it's no longer national polling, it's these battleground states, and that's, I think, something to be concerned for sure. Showing Trump down by big numbers, 10 points in Pennsylvania, 11 points in Michigan, 11 points in Wisconsin. This is according to a Siena College poll done for the New York Times. Got to pay attention, pay real close attention to what they are using in their sample. They're using registered voters. What do we know? Registered voters are not likely voters. Registered voter polls are polls of adults. Those always lean Democrat. So the idea here is you see all of this polling, and you think Donald Trump's in trouble. James Carville last night on MSNBC, it's over. All we got to do is figure out the right person for Biden to make his running mate. It's done. It's settled. It's not over. Just you keep looking at these polls, and at this moment in history, first of all, the polls will tighten up. We could quibble about the polls and the methodologies, but they are going to tighten. There's no question in my mind that Trump's a little behind right now. I think that is a fair assessment, but I don't think it's double digits by any means. I think a lot of what you're seeing right now is very important. You're watching these polls. I think it's just trying to gin up some enthusiasm for Democrats, or it's trying to downplay anything Trump is getting right or wrong. But the media has done that the whole time since his inauguration. He's not going to get a W for anything. But what you're seeing is just pay real close attention to the samples and who they are sampling. Adults or registered voters is not an accurate depiction of the situation right now. Where you want to look is the trends. And these polls are a lot tighter, these quote-unquote registered voter polls were a lot tighter 4 or 5 months ago. And now that trend's going the other way. It's backsliding for Trump. And Trump's in real danger of not winning re-election. But it's not as far-fetched as you think that he could pull it out. And that's what we're... This flurry of polling, it's not by accident. Why does everybody need to do a poll right now? And I think it's to kind of poison the well going into summer or going into the summer months to home stretch here. But we haven't even had a convention yet. And really what you want to see if you're a political party, if you're the incumbent party and you're having your political convention, you don't have all the intrigue of the nomination. Everybody knows Trump's going to win. We know Biden's the presumptive nominee as well. But you want to build some momentum coming out of that. You want to have the right speakers, the right surrogates speaking on your behalf, and you build momentum, and you head into November. We haven't even gotten there yet. But people look around, and they see a lot of things going on. Black Lives Matter protest. You see the pandemic coming, making a comeback. Texas back, rolling back some opening. Florida as well. And then that has a certain impact on the electorate. But as that happens, this is going to go the other way at some point, and things will tighten up. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities. This is not a done deal that we're talking President-elect Joe Biden on November 4th. That's not a done deal at all. But the gap is not as wide as the media and some of these polls portray it, I believe. I think when it's all said and done, if the election were tomorrow, it might be a Biden win, but 2 or 3 points in these key states. Don't pay attention to these national polls. They, unless you're looking at trends, the national polls are largely irrelevant only because where they poll, which typically be in more populated areas, but we don't elect the president with the popular vote. We elect state by state by state. And that's why, but all of a sudden now you're seeing all of these battleground polls. Fox News had one the other day as well. But Fox News got the 2016 election wrong. Fox News, for whatever reason, their polls always lean Democrat. Their network leans Republican, but their polls lean Democrat. And they underpoll Republicans in a lot of these polls. Also, take this into account, guys. I don't know how many of you listening out there get a call from a pollster, but if you did, given the political climate out there, how people are losing their livelihoods, their businesses, if you say the wrong thing, if you don't worship at the altar of Black Lives Matter, you're targeted, you're going to be maybe a little less likely to respond to a pollster if you're a Republican. I think that has an impact as well. I think it's a very important thing to point out. But that seems to be kind of the political news right now. What's going to happen in November? We'll look at all this polls. Donald Trump is in trouble. Don't think he's as bad a trouble as everyone says he is. All right, folks, we got to take a timeout. We will be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And you don't have Sean Sullivan. You have Jeff Poore filling in for the great Sean Sullivan, who has allowed me to sit behind one of his prestigious microphones for the day here on Midday Mobile. Give him a little time off. He's a hard-earned time off as it is Friday afternoon, so you get a head start on the weekend. So they also want to bring to your attention, folks. Talk about the Senate race here in Alabama real quick. Some more polling. You'll talk more about polling. It seems to be the theme of the early going here. Doug Jones seems to be holding his own, and that's according to this memo from ALG Research, it's a Democrat polling firm, against both Sessions and Tommy Tuberville in a head-to-head ballot test matchup. And this is of registered voters, according to this polling outfit. Just Sessions, if he were the nominee, would have a two-point edge over Doug Jones. If it were Tuberville, it's not much better. Three-point edge, 47-44 for Tuberville over Jones, 45-43 Sessions over Jones. Fascinating, right? I'm a little skeptical of this poll. I think there's some motivations to get Democrats to pump money into Alabama. That's what that seems like to me. But I, what I don't get is, do they know that there is a big box at the top of the ballot, a general election ballot that says Democrat Party or Republican Party, and most people don't look any further than that. They just check Republican or they check Democrat. The straight ticket voting, how do you overcome that if you're Doug Jones? I don't think a Democrat can win on a general election ballot in Alabama unless it's two things. You take that straight ticket voting off, or if the Republican nominee is Roy Moore, then people might break it up. But if I'm Doug Jones and I'm looking at this, I think my objective heading into November, if I really think I got a shot at re-election, is to explain to people, hey, if you want to vote for Trump, go ahead. Just don't check that straight ticket box. And give some specific instructions. But do we think it's that tight? Especially since Republicans haven't really come out with the ammo against Doug Jones yet. We're going to be reminded of his vote on Brett Kavanaugh, of his vote on impeachment. It's Doug Jones' vote, that is. We're going to be reminded of that. Trust me, we will be reminded of that. That will be showcased on the airwaves. Republicans must win this seat if they have any hopes of maintaining control of the Senate, because it's a very tough map in 2020. And there's a lot of races. Cory Gardner in Colorado, Martha McSally in Arizona. Those are tough races for Republicans. And they're going to have to pick this seat up to have any prayer. Mitch McConnell, that is going to have any prayer of maintaining control of the Senate. But it's kind of a fascinating thing. There's a lot of that going on where there's money involved. How can you get money steered toward a race in Alabama? Because most Democrats are going to say, all right, well, let's concede this. Let's focus on some battleground states. There's a presidential election underway. The resources are finite, very limited, and we need to put that dollar where it will get us the best result. But Doug Jones and these polling outfits, they are making the case that there is that Alabama is not the quote-unquote lost cause that Jones can win. The fascinating thing to me about Jones at this moment in time, he's abandoned any pretense of being the moderate. He is voting straight with Schumer. His statements, his press statements, his public appearances are very conventional wisdom Democrat. It's not like a Joe Manchin situation in West Virginia where he is Democrat light. He's kind of given up on the all shucks, good old country boy Doug Jones. He is Black Lives Matter. All of this going on with COVID-19, everybody needs to wear a mask and social distance. He's borderline alarmist on that. And I don't care what people say that this shouldn't be a partisan issue. It, in an ideal world, COVID-19 shouldn't be a partisan issue, but it is. The reality is conservative leaning Republicans tend to shrug it off, and Democrats, left-leaning Democrats, want to lock everything down and go full on nanny state. I mean, that's just the reality. Is that right? No, absolutely not. It shouldn't be partisan. We should try to find whatever the right solution is. But when you got to play the hand you're dealt, Jones is going with the alarmist or whatever you want to call it. Some of you may take issue with me calling it alarmist, but I think, for the sake of this argument, I mean, that's kind of where he is. He's in that camp. He's just Stephen Reed, the mayor of Montgomery, with Randall Wood Finn in Birmingham. They want to impose government will till you got to wear a mask out. They don't want to leave it up to the individual or private businesses. And that is a Democrat sort of one-size-fits-all approach. I'm not saying it's wrong, but that is what Democrats do. It's you know, the power of the individual versus the power of the group. That's kind of always the argument in these things, and that's where this is lining up, and Jones is leaning on that. But I would say to a state like Alabama, there's going to be pushback to everything that's going on. You may not be happy with Donald Trump, but let's take Trump out of it and just look at what's going on in the country right now. These institutions that are under attack. I saw just the craziest story, a New York Post story, wanting to change the national anthem to John Lennon's Imagine All the People or whatever. I mean, that's where woke jumps the shark, and people are going to have a reaction to that. And I think it shows up at the ballot box, because where else can you do it unless it's in the cloak of secrecy with a curtain or a divider? Because obviously it's too impolitic to go out and voice your frustration with all of this. You'll be attacked, maligned. People are afraid of losing their jobs or their livelihood over a Facebook post or something nonsensical like that. And that's where we're at. But Alabama particularly, people aren't going to like what's going on in these other cities. They don't want that here. They, you know, all these cities where you have defund the police, and Minneapolis voted today or is moving forward today with disbanding their police. You don't want that in Alabama. So what are you going to do? Are you going to go vote for a Democrat? Probably not. Are you going to vote for Doug Jones? Probably not. Unless you have some kind of convoluted reasoning, you're probably going to go with whoever the Republican may be. Now, Republicans have not picked their nominee yet. That's decided here in, I guess we're a little over 2 weeks away from the Republican runoff primary. And that was always the fear. We have this circular firing squad situation in the primary, and now you have this they're just bludgeoning each other, fear, with Tuberville versus Sessions. And it's knocking their approval numbers down a lot. According to this Democrat poll, Tuberville, with only a 40% favorable, and a very weak Jeff Sessions at 33%. You could attribute some of that, having these low favorables, high unfavorables, to these two candidates beating each other up, and it's having an impact on their favorables. Oddly enough, in this memo, there's no favorable, unfavorable number for Doug Jones, who voted for impeachment, voted for Kavanaugh. But just wait till that comes to fruition. And we have a nominee on the Republican side, and Republicans, and you have the NRSC come in or whomever come in and start beating up on Jones. So I guarantee you, national Republicans are already tracking Jones. They follow him around. They've been following him around for the last year and a half. There's unlimited B-roll or camera footage of Doug Jones talking and taking some positions that are going to be used in campaign commercials. That will come. And that's what's going to make this race a lot, not as close as they're trying to make it out to be right now. But as for right now, I think the way this is going, this is nothing but kind of a, they know this race is going to widen. But Democrats want Democrats to spend some money in Alabama.
Jeff, got a couple of questions for you on the text line here. Matt asks a question that I was going to ask. He said, can you explain how one gets polled? I've been around for 40 years, and I've never been called about any poll.
Well, that's what happens. I've seen these polling operations. There used to be one here at the University of South Alabama where it's just a phone bank, and they're cold calling numbers. They're cold calling landlines. It's a little different now. You have to figure out, because most people have done away with their landline. They just have a cell phone. Some of these polls are done scientifically over the internet, that you get an invitation or some kind of email, and then you're given like a $5 Amazon gift card or something. There's all these ways they do it. They compile the data. And there's arguments about whether what the right way and what the most accurate way to do it, but mostly it's telephone surveys. And they get you in on the telephone, and you sit through it. I would argue, though, especially in Alabama, but more conservative and right-leaning places, and this is where I think they went wrong in 16, was a lot of Republicans aren't going to respond to this. They hear, you know, they're skeptical of it, and also the way they weight certain demographics, that if you have, say you're an African American, they're harder to reach. Well, they're going to poll them. Well, their response might weigh more than another response. So there's all these things they try to do to get accurate, but some of it's just not going to work. And who knows what a likely voter is here in the era of coronavirus. Who knows? All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan. Take a little time away. Seen him around and about today, but I think he's going to get early start on the weekend. At least I hope he's getting some errands run or something, but well-deserved time off for Sean. I am filling in Jeff Poor, Breitbart News, Yellowhammer News, Lanyap, and if you're ever in the Huntsville area, WVNN, I'm an afternoon host there. So always a pleasure to be talking to a Mobile audience. Still to come on the program, we're hearing from Congressman Mo Brooks in the next hour, so please stay tuned for that. But joining us on the line now, a friend of ours up in Huntsville, comes on from time to time, State Senator Greg Allbritton. He's also the chairman of the General Fund Committee. Senator, how are you this afternoon?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well. A lot of things going on. Montgomery's starting to pick back up as we are learning more about revenues and things of that nature in this economy, this economic downturn because of the pandemic. Got a statement from you and your colleague, Del Marsh, the pro tem, earlier this week. You want to get back into Montgomery and start talking about how to grapple with some of these challenges on the budget side.
Well, it's not so much that we are so eager to get back to Montgomery, all right? But the responsibilities and with the circumstances like they are, we've got to start putting more attention to the matters right now. We can't wait till February, can't wait till fall. We need to keep good track of what's going on now.
Well, do you get a sense of kind of are the projections of what we talked about in March and April and only into May, are the projections true to what they were, or do you feel like there is work to be done?
Well, the work to be done really is a matter of making sure that we're on target. Yes, we passed a general fund budget. Yes, we've had a quarter of economic stalemate, if you will, or stoppage. And we got to make sure that we have revenue enough to meet the demands through the remainder of this fiscal year. And that's what we're trying to pay attention to. The data that we had back in March, April, and May seemed to indicate that we were okay, that things were going to be all right. We were going to take a hit, but nothing that we could not withstand. But that's kind of a tenuous matter when you don't know where the end is going to wind up. So we're calling the General Fund Budget Committee together to have an open discussion of where we are at this point. On July 9th, we will at that point have the figures through that quarter, March, April, May, and June, whichever. The June numbers will be in, and then we will be able to determine, or not determine, but at least make sure that the revenue flow is going to be adequate for the remainder of this fiscal year. That's part of the purpose. And right now, from what we can see, we seem to be on target. But I want that to be noted and made a matter as public as possible so that not only we will know, but the public will know where we're headed.
And a lot of these measures you had in place, you had a rollover, you had a rainy day fund set aside for such situations. Those are holding up.
Those are the ETF. They have those monies that's there, and that's helped them a great deal. general fund doesn't have that. We live on the money that comes in every time, and that's kind of where we want to make sure that we're doing okay.
So the SSUT, I guess, is helping out a little bit?
Tremendously. It's helping out a great deal. That was one of the smart moves our predecessors made in order to get the general fund stabilized, and it seems to be working.
Senator, do you have any indication from the governor that you know, there is a lot of scuttlebutt about the potential for a special session? Some of your colleagues say yes, some of your colleagues say no. Is there any signal or any indication from the governor's office about the possibility of a special session this year?
Well, you're correct. It doesn't matter what myself or my colleagues say. The one that's in charge of calling a special session is the governor. And I'm sure she will call a special session if she feels that we need matters to deal with them. But with that special session comes costs. And right now, I in this fiscal year, I'd like to keep the cost as low as possible. But again, if the need's there, she'll call it.
Well, but
I don't know. I don't know that there's any strong push to accomplish or to move forward with a special session at this point.
Do you hear any? Have you heard much from your colleagues on the House side, Chairman Klaus, or anybody else on the House side? Because they seem to have been relatively quiet throughout this time.
Well, it was the House that you know, in the Senate, we were ready to move forward with the Commerce bill to extend the time on that. We were willing to move forward with the liability COVID liability bill in the Senate, but the House said no, we're not going to do that. We just want to get the budgets done and go home. We had the opportunity to do those back in May, and it was the House that decided not to do that. So I can't see taking and bringing us back at this point into a special session to accomplish that which we could have done before. So I don't know. I would think that there'd be more something unusual or something more pressing for a special session, not just those matters.
Well, it's my understanding there's some economic development things that are set to lapse later this year, and that would be a cause for a special session. If you had to do it anyway, could you not add some of these other elements like the liability protection for COVID-19?
All that is going to be up to the governor as to how we do that. And in a special session, any legislature can bring any bill. It's just that if it's not in the call, then it requires a supermajority to pass. So that complicates matters. But I don't know. We'll see what the governor will do. She has not spoken to me or as to what her intention is on that. And I haven't inquired of that either. I believe as far as the commerce matter, yes, it's due to expire at the end, I think, of this fiscal year. But we only have a few months left from that point to the regular, something that could be done then. I don't know. That's going to be up to the governor. I just don't see the taking the time and the expense is going to be worthwhile.
We're joined by State Senator Greg Allbritton here on FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Senator, the prison situation, it seems like they can keep being kicked down the road here. Do you have any sense about the prisons, the DOJ? Are they willing to wait until the 2021 legislative session for some kind of fix, or do you think, you know, was there also the possibility, I guess, of the governor going at it on her own? Well, what are you hearing on that?
We have been suffering with prison difficulties now for a generation or more. A few weeks or months isn't going to make a whole lot of difference. We have increased the budget for Department of Corrections substantially in the past 3 years, mostly for the purpose of hiring people. And while they are taking steps and moving somewhat forward, the reports I'm getting show a limited, very limited growth in personnel. We've got to do something, I think, a little bit different. Now, I don't think that requires a special session. We've already funded it. We've already established the BCO program and some other programs for bonuses and things to try to increase that. A special session may not be the answer in that regard. It may be cause that, again, depends on what the governor's plan for solution is going to be. But I tell you, Jeff, prisons and those matters are a continual problem, and the legislature is extremely interested in how this goes down and how it happens. So we're anxious to get this resolved and get out from under DOJ's thumb if we can.
Well, and to talk about KIV going at it on her own for new prison construction, obviously she could do that without the legislature, voting or anything. But I guess ultimately you guys would have to pass a general fund expenditure for this. Are you getting any sense that that's kind of where we're headed? Does that seem like we're heading toward the governor acting on her own in this regard?
Well, I think she's been acting on her own. The P3 system, that's the public-private partnership system, is designed for the executive to move forward with. And that's the plan she seems to be fostering at this point. At this juncture, and I've spoken to them recently, I've spoken to them many times, and the governor has met with leadership through the course of session this past spring on these matters. There have been pointed, difficult questions asked, and it appears that the executive is determined to continue to move forward with that. And I think she has the right to do so. We are watching it as close as we can. That's one of the reasons we're calling the general fund, is to make sure we're doing the proper oversight in those matters also.
Is the and last time we talked, there was things were kind of contentious between all the parties, the House and the governor, heading out on the last day of session there. Has that situation improved?
Look, we are that gets to another reason why I thought I'd better call a general fund. Look, we could sit back and let these things fester, get worse, and we could spend the whole time talking about each other and making things develop worse than they are. Or we could get back on that buck and bronco horse and start working together and start talking with each other instead of about each other, and to try to bring about good government as much as we can on this. And I think that's what we're trying to accomplish here. We're trying to pull the adults into the room to continue to work together. We got two more years to work this through. We can't just break down and sulk. We've got to work this. And that's why we're coming together on the night to try to start talking with each other again.
And we'll wrap it up on this, kind of unrelated to anything we just discussed, this Monument Preservation Act issue as it's interpreted by the courts and the way it's being enforced. Do you have any thoughts about what's going on with that?
Which one is that, Jeff, now?
The Monument Preservation Act, where they're, that y'all passed in 2017 with the protections put up for some of these monuments, and the Attorney General having to step in and enforce it now.
The monuments and such. Talk about a contentious issue. We need to talk logically about this and try to get the emotions out of it. But it will be a topic of discussion. It will be a topic that we will argue about. Both sides need to come together on what we're going to do. But we cannot rewrite history, and we cannot just willy-nilly eliminate a part of the history. Where do we shut history down? 1956 or 1860? We've got to stop looking backward, and we've got to start looking forward as to what we're going to do. and what we're going to be now, not what we were or what people thought we were. We've got to be who we need to be. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. Hey, Senator, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but I really want to thank you for making time for us today.
Not a problem. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. That was State Senator Greg Albritt. Represents some of the folks up in the northern half of Baldwin County, but always a pleasure to have him on. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Shapur filling in for Sean Sullivan today on this Friday afternoon. Thank you for tuning in. FM Talk 106.5, 55 minutes after the hour. A couple of things, housekeeping items here. The NASCAR news thing. Sean and I talked about this a little bit yesterday in my regular Wednesday, or day before yesterday in my regular Wednesday segment. NASCAR's taking another swing at it. And this was a big deal about the way the knot was tied and the definition of a noose. But can we just say this? NASCAR really blew it here. I get it. The tensions were high. I was at the track on Sunday up in Talladega. And, you know, up and down Speedway Boulevard were these trucks with Confederate flags trying to make a statement. Overhead was an airplane with one of those banners like you see at the beach, and it said Defund NASCAR. It had a Confederate flag on it. But at some point, NASCAR has to recognize that they're maligning their fans. Most people see that headline, and they don't know the circumstances. They didn't know that in that garage you could only be employees. Or that, actually, they're probably not even looking past that was a pre-existing quote-unquote noose. They just think it was just some racist Dale Earnhardt fan that did it, trying to be cute or something. And where I feel like NASCAR is really lacking here is an apology. That we sounded this alarm, we inflamed these emotions, we made it a national story, we jumped the gun here, guys. And for that reason, we apologize. We apologize to our fans. We should have been more responsible. Instead, they're taking this other approach. Well, we may have gotten a little ahead of ourselves, but we don't want to, you know, we want to make sure that everybody understands that we are in support of racial equality, et cetera. And just a blown opportunity there. Just remember who your fans are, NASCAR. It's not this commercialized kind of weird Black Lives Matter thing going on right now. And you're trying to capitalize off the wrong thing. Something else I want to bring up before we go to break here. Governor Kay Ivey speaking to the Huntsville-Madison County Chamber of Commerce admits that she should not have deemed some businesses non-essential. Wasn't that nice of her? I think where she is messing up here, it's not what she had labeled or the words she used. It's the shutdown itself. It seemed to be an overreach. It put a lot of people out of work. It hurt the economy in Alabama. And it played favorites. There is no question that the state played favorites here. If you're Walmart, you got a pass. If you're Lowe's, you got a pass. If you're a furniture store in downtown Atmore, you didn't get a pass. Whereas those places obviously are equipped to handle social distancing and all the things they could have put in place, they jumped the gun here. And throughout that ordeal, I thought this governor and this administration operated with a degree of arrogance. That they weren't open to suggestions, that they knew what was best for you, and you better listen, you better play along, because you don't know what's good for you. Certainly there were some unknowns, but as conditions evolved and people saw what was going on, they certainly could have done some things to open some of those businesses back up and not starve them of potential income and revenue to keep them afloat. All right, folks, we are going to take a timeout. We will be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.